empty things. You know, Christmas time is coming up, and I know a lot of you have already done your shopping, but maybe some of you haven't. So I wanted to try to offer to help you out this morning, if I can. I may have some things here that would be good for you to get for somebody for their Christmas present. So everybody loves Little Debbie snack cakes. Here is, now those are really good, or at least they were really good. They seem to be all gone, but you can have the box if you want. Anybody want the box? I mean, it's still a pretty picture there with the, nobody's interested in giving that for a Christmas present. Well, now how about this? Now, Big Red, it's a strawberry cream soda. It, really good, but it seems to be empty. Anybody want a bottle? I mean, yeah, you could do something with that. Fill it with rocks and you could hit your spouse on the head. But you probably wouldn't want to give that to them then because they might do that to you. But no, nobody wants that either. Let's see what else I've got here. Oh, we got a battery. And the only battery, Christmas time. Everybody needs batteries, right? My only problem is that this particular battery, well, it's already been used up. It's empty. I mean, you might, if you put it with another one, put it in a flashlight, the flashlight might come on for a couple of seconds. Maybe even 10 seconds. It might. Anybody want a used up battery, an empty battery? Nobody? I bought something recently that came in the mail with an empty battery in it. So I had to replace the battery first thing. Okay. Well, how about this? Oh, CDs and DVDs, they're all the rage at Christmas time. Everybody, and so here is an empty little case that you could keep some in, at least. Anybody? Give you a discount on it. Bargain if you buy them all. Well, I've got one more thing. I've got an empty Walmart bag. Anybody want that?
I'll take it.
You'll take the Walmart bag. They are good for trash bags in your car. Yeah, you can feel, well, the problem is this one's got some holes in the bottom, so your peas will all fall out if you. But so.
Patch
duct tape. Yeah, you can put a little duct tape on there and patch that up. Now the thing is, most empty things are of no value to us. That's why we throw them away. We don't want the empty things. Now, I might be able to convince somebody that there's some value to something like that. I'm reminded of if any of you ever read the old Pippi Longstocking book, she goes out with her friends and they're finding things, and she finds an old rusty empty can. And she's like, oh, look at this. And they're like, what's so special about that? Well, she decides it'd be a great helmet, so she puts it on her head, and it'll protect her head. Well, then she's walking around, she can't see where she's going, and so she trips and falls. Fortunately, she got that can on her head, so she doesn't get hurt. Because, you know, that can protects her from getting hurt. And they said, well, if you hadn't put the can on your head in the first place, you wouldn't have tripped and fallen, because you could have seen where you were going. Well, most of the time, old, empty, used-up things are useless. Even if we might fool somebody into thinking they're of some value, or even if we might find something we could do with it. I mean, certainly there are things we could do with those things. Most of them not very good. Now, I don't know if that Little Debbie box, now some of the Little Debbie box around Christmas time, they got the little Christmas tags on the back, so you can cut the little tags out, the little to and from, and they got pretty little tags on them. That one may not. But maybe somebody could fool somebody into thinking that something was worth something. However, not every empty thing is completely worthless. In fact, sometimes there actually are some things that are worth noting, and we'll get to that in a little bit. 1 Samuel chapter 12 and verse 21, the Bible says, "Do not turn aside, for then you would go after empty things which cannot profit or deliver, for they are nothing." You don't want to go after those empty things, worthless things, useless things. Vain is another word that's often used, especially in the King James Version, to define something that's empty. It's useless, it's worthless. not even worth the trouble of the effort that it would take to get it. So let's examine three things this morning. First of all, let's examine some worthless empty things. We'll start with that. And we'll begin, first of all, with empty words. You know, there are lots of words that we use from day to day. But empty words are not good words. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 1 through 6. We're warned about a lot of different things. He says, be imitators of God as dear children. He tells us to walk in love as Christ has loved us. He warns us of the dangers of fornication and covetousness and several other things, filthiness and coarse jesting and so forth. But down in verse 6 he says, let no one deceive you with empty words. For because of these things the wrath of God comes upon the sons of disobedience. We live in a day and age where a lot of people in the religious world are being deceived by empty words. They are convinced, and have been being convinced for quite some time, that God didn't really mean what He said. And they'll say, oh, well, it'll be okay. God loves you. He's gracious. He's merciful. God would never send anybody to hell or any of those things. And they've all of these empty words. And they've convinced people of all of these things. They've told people that all of these things are going to happen in a certain way when God said they would be different than that. Those words are empty. They're useless words. They won't stand against the things that God has said. So we have to beware of that. As we think about this as well, we notice Job 21 and verse 34. Job says, how then can you comfort me with empty words, since falsehood remains in your answers? You know, there are times in our lives where words just, it doesn't matter what words are spoken to us, they just won't help. They're empty. They don't have a value. But I think about a lot of empty words. I think about those folks, and an example of this would be the husband or wife sometimes who is abusive to their spouse. But then they'll say, oh, well, you know, I love you. I love you, but then they'll turn around and abuse that person, either physically or emotionally, mentally in some way. They're taking advantage of that person and mistreating them. But then they'll say, oh, but I love you. Well, the fact of the matter is, if you love me, you wouldn't mistreat me that way. Those are empty words. When I say, I love you, but then I don't act like I love you, that's an empty word that's being said. And there are a lot of people who practice a lot of different things that are empty words that cause some to go astray. One of the things that we might think about is the old saying, say what you mean and mean what you say, but don't be mean when you say it. And so that's a good practice for us. We don't just say empty words that can't mean anything or aren't trustworthy. We need to avoid being like the politicians who make all the empty promises and say all sorts of things that really have no meaning to them. We're not to be like that. In fact, the Bible warns us, you know, don't swear by this or that, but let your yes be yes and your no be no. Mean it when you say it. Say what you mean and mean what you say. Then also there are empty hands. Empty hands can be a sad, useless thing. Deuteronomy 16, verses 16 and 17, God said to the Jews, three times a year shall all the males appear before the Lord in the place which He chooses, at the Feast of the Unleavened Bread, the Feast of Weeks, and the Feast of Tabernacles. And they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. You don't come in with empty hands. When you come before the Lord, you bring your offering, you bring your gift. Every man shall give as he is able according to the blessing of the Lord your God which is given to you. So definitely we need to not come to God with empty hands when we should be bringing an offering. In Deuteronomy also in chapter 15 and verses 12 and 13, he says, if your brother, a Hebrew man or woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. And when you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go away empty-handed. This person served you for 6 years. Well, don't let that be the end of it then. Give them something to go along with their time they served you when they leave. And so he says, don't let them go away empty-handed. Well, then we also think about empty hearts, perhaps worse than empty hands, because sometimes we just don't have anything to give, do we? There are times when there's nothing to offer and we just have to go with empty hands. And that's understandable at times. But empty hearts? James 2, verses 15 and 16 says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things that are needed for the body, what does it profit? Your heart's empty. He said, if there's any bowels of mercy, if you've got a heart, why would you do something like that and not help that brother or sister who's in need? Because our hearts should never be empty. We need to have our hearts full with God's love. And that then, of course, will express itself in our actions. We shouldn't have empty heads. They're worthless as well. Job chapter 11 and verse 12. An empty-headed man will be wise when a wild donkey's colt is born a man. Now we know that's never going to happen, is it? He said, you're never going to be wise until you fill your head up with something. We're going to have to fill our head up with some knowledge before we can become wise. As long as our head's empty, we're never going to be wise. In Psalm 92 in verses 5 and 6, O Lord, how great are your works. Your thoughts are very deep. A senseless man does not know, nor does a fool understand this. One of the things that Jesus warned us about in the New Testament was not saying to someone else and accusing that person of being empty-headed. Like one of those terms that he used in, as he's saying, you know, beware of calling your brother this or that or the other thing. And then finally he says, beware if you call them fool, you'll be in danger of hellfire. But the word raka that he uses in the King James, that basically means you're empty-headed. You hadn't got a brain in your head. There's nothing in there. You're an airhead. And so he says, be careful accusing folks of that. That's a pretty harsh criticism, isn't it? To say somebody is empty-headed. And yet we read here in Job, an empty-headed man. Well, there are some folks that are empty-headed. Now, that doesn't mean they don't know anything, but they don't know the things that are of value. There may be folks that know every little detail of every trivial thing that there ever is, and they could win that game, Trivial Pursuit, you know. But when it comes to anything useful, they hadn't got any of that in their head. And that's kind of a sad situation. We need to be sure that our heads aren't empty. An empty head is a worthless head. And certainly, you know, can you imagine what good would our heads do us if there really wasn't a brain in there? If it really was empty, we'd be dead, wouldn't we? And then there are empty vessels. In Jeremiah 14, verse 3, it says, their nobles have sent their lads for water. They went to the cisterns and found no water. They returned with their vessels empty. They were ashamed and confounded and covered their heads. You know, it's one thing to go to the well with an empty bucket, but what happens when you come back from the well and your bucket's still empty? That's not good, is it? That's worthless. Now, either you got a hole in your bucket there, dear Liza, or else you've got a problem with your well and you don't have any water in the well. And that's a dangerous situation as well. In Jeremiah 51 and verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, has devoured me. He has crushed me. He has made me an empty vessel. He swallowed me up like a monster. He has filled his stomach with my delicacies and he has spit me out. There are a lot of bad things happening in that particular passage, aren't there? But he has made me an empty vessel. He has just continued to destroy me to the point that I have nothing left. And sometimes people can get to that point where they're just empty. Empty inside and they can't hold anything. Like trying to pour water into a sieve. It just runs right through. And that's a sad situation. We don't want to be in that situation. But then there are those who have empty lives. You know, there are millions, I guess I could say billions around the world, millions in this country, billions around the world, who are living empty lives. And how worthless that is. How sad that is that their life is empty. Isaiah 29 and verse 8, he says, "It shall be as when a hungry man dreams, and look, he eats, but he awakes, and his soul is still empty. Or as when a thirsty man dreams, and look, he dreams, but he awakens, and indeed he is faint, and his soul still craves. So the multitude of all the nations shall be who fight against Mount Zion." You ever done that? You ever have a dream that you were hungry, and in your dream you ate something, but you woke up and you were still hungry. That tummy was rumbling, or you maybe dreamed you were thirsty, and you woke up, you were still thirsty. You ever had that happen? It reminds me of the story of the boy that fell asleep and he dreamed he ate giant marshmallows. Great big giant marshmallows. And then he woke up and found both his pillows were missing. So you got to be careful what you're dreaming about. But most of the time, you know, we dream we ate something. It doesn't fill us, does it? We can remember, you know, when you think back to the best meal we ever had. And when we think about that for a minute. What's the best meal you ever... Maybe I shouldn't start that this early. We won't make it all the way through till lunchtime if we do that. But when you think about that great meal and, oh, you remember the tastes and the textures and the smells of that food, and does it make you more full? Well, no, it doesn't. In fact, quite the opposite. It makes you hungrier just thinking about that and remembering that good meal. Oh, I remember that. And, oh, I wish I could have that now. And you just get hungrier and hungrier. It's emptier and emptier. And some people live their lives that way, always wishing for what they don't have and never wanting what they do have. And their life is empty. It's like a dog chasing its tail. You ever seen a dog actually catch its tail? It doesn't know what to do with it. If it catches it, and it bites its tail, and then, whoa, that hurt, let go of that, and then it gets chase it again. But some of us are like that. We're just chasing our tail. We don't know what we want. We don't know what's good for it. We just keep going round in circles. Ecclesiastes 6:12 says, "For who knows what is good for man in life? All the days of his vain or empty life, which he passes like a shadow. Who can tell a man what will happen after him under the sun?" So many people just live an empty life. It has no fulfillment to it. And we don't want any of those things in our lives to be empty. We don't want to have empty words, empty hands, empty hearts, empty heads, empty vessels, or empty lives. However, some empty things are worth noticing. They are of some value. And so we want to notice a few of those real quick. Empty containers that are there to be filled. Now, we talked about some of those already, but they weren't able to fill them because the well had run dry. But, you know, we actually do buy some things empty. You can go to the store and there are whole rows at Walmart or at the grocery store of containers that are empty. Cookie jars and bowls and cups and all of these plastic containers, storage containers of various different kinds. And they're all empty. Well, what good are they then? Well, they're good because you can put things in them. And then, especially, you know, the Ziploc or Glad plate, you know, you put your leftover food in there and you can snap it shut and seal it, put it in the refrigerator, and save it for later. And that's a good thing if the empty container can be filled. And Judges chapter 7, verse 16. "He divided the 300 men into three companies. He put a trumpet in every man's hand with empty pitchers and lamps within the pitcher." So they were, in this case, actually using the empty pitcher to hide their light so that the enemy would not see them until they were ready to surprise the enemy. And then they broke those empty vessels. So those vessels served their purpose. They hid the approaching army from the enemy. And that's a good thing. That worked well. In 2 Kings 4, verses 1 through 7, Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha, saying, Your servant, my husband, is dead, and I don't know what I'm going to do about this. It's a bad situation, wasn't it? So Elijah said to her, Well, what do you want me to do for you? What do you have in your house? She said, Well, the only thing I've got is a pot of oil. So he said, Well, here's what you do. Go borrow as many empty vessels from your neighbors as you can. Get every empty container you can find. And then come back. And they came back and they started pouring the oil into the empty vessels and filled them and filled them and filled them until they had filled them all. And she said, Bring me another one. And the boys said, There's not any more. They're all full. And so then she had to stop pouring the oil. But that was the more empty vessels she had, the better at that point, wasn't it? The more, because then she could sell that oil was the idea. She was going to be able to sell that oil to make money to pay her dead husband's debts. So that's a good thing sometimes, to have something empty that we can fill up, a container that can be filled. But then sometimes there is an empty seat. Do you notice, as we look around the congregation, do we notice when there's an empty seat, when a brother or sister is missing? Do we notice that empty seat? It's worth noticing when there's an empty seat. And sometimes we're more observant than other times, obviously, and sometimes we're not paying attention and we miss that. But an empty seat is something of notice that should be noticeable. In 1 Samuel 20 and verse 18, see, we should be missing the one that's there. Jonathan said to David, David was going to leave. He was going to go away because King Saul was trying to kill him. But Jonathan said, Now wait a minute. If you're gone, tomorrow is the new moon and they're going to have the feast. And you'll be missed because your seat's going to be empty. Now he had an assigned seat. We don't really have assigned seats, but we always sit in the same place, don't we? But he said, You know, my father's going to notice that your seat is empty. An empty seat is something to notice. Something worth noticing. But then the third thing that we want to examine this morning is that the most valuable thing in the world is empty. And we've talked about worthless things that are empty. We've talked about some empty things that are noticeable, that are of note, and maybe useful a little bit. But now we want to notice that the single most important and most valuable thing in this world is empty. In Luke chapter 24, in verses 1 through 7, Luke says, On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, they came to the sepulchre, bringing the spices which they had prepared, and certain others with them. They found the stone rolled away from the sepulchre, and they entered in and found not the body of the Lord Jesus. They found the tomb empty. It's the most valuable thing in the world. As Christians, if that tomb had not been found empty, there would be no point in us being Christians. If Jesus is still in the grave, then we have no hope for any eternal life or anything else. The empty tomb keeps our faith from being empty. Interesting. One empty thing keeps another empty thing from being empty. 1 Corinthians 15:14. If Christ is not risen, then our preaching is empty and your faith is also empty. There's no point in us being here if Christ isn't risen. You know, the religious world's about to celebrate the birth of Christ with Christ. Oh, the birth of Christ, the birth of Christ. Now, we don't want to belittle the birth of Christ. It was a miraculous thing. It was an amazing thing. But the Bible doesn't say if the virgin birth hadn't happened, your faith would be in vain. It says, if Christ isn't risen, your faith is in vain. That's the key. Doris told her class the story of Jesus' resurrection. And then, to emphasize the idea of new life springing forth, she gave each of the children a large plastic egg. And she said, now I want you to take this home and bring it back next time with something inside that shows new life. Do you understand? I said, oh yeah, yeah. So they all went home. Yes, Miss Miller, we're going to do that. They went home, and she was concerned about Jeremy. He was mentally handicapped, and he was terminally ill. He knew he was going to die at some time in the very near future. But he continued to come to class. Did he understand what she had been saying to him? She didn't know. He didn't enthusiastically say, yes, we'll do that like the other students. Maybe she should call his parents, let them know what he was supposed to do so he would not forget or not fail to understand what he was supposed to do. But it got busy that night. Some problems came up and she forgot. The next morning, 19 children came and put their eggs in the wicker basket. The first egg, she found a flower. Oh yes, a flower is a sign of life. That's my egg. She looked in the next egg and there was a plastic butterfly. And she said, oh, a butterfly, yes, certainly that reminds us. Oh, my daddy helped me. She opened up the third egg and there was a rock with some moss on it. Oh, that moss growing even on a dead rock, there would still be some life. That shows life. Then the fourth egg was empty. She thought, oh, that must be Jeremy's egg. He didn't understand what he was supposed to do. He didn't do it. He just brought the egg back. So she didn't say anything about it. She was going to set it aside and started to reach for another. And Jeremy said, aren't you going to talk about my egg? She said, but Jeremy, your egg is empty. He said, yes. And Jesus' tomb was empty too. Time stopped. 3 months later, Jeremy died. Those who came to the mortuary were surprised to see 19 eggs on top of his casket, all empty. You know, there are a lot of things in this life that we run across that are empty. But the most valuable thing is Jesus' empty tomb. We need to consider that the risen life of Jesus is the nourishment and strength and blessing and life for us as Christians. Our daily experience ought to be that there comes a wave after wave, but silent, gentle, and yet omnipotent influx into our empty hearts to fill them up with the very life of Christ Himself. Alexander McLaren. You know, it is something that we need to think about. Are we allowing the empty tomb of Jesus Christ to fill our lives with meaning day after day? If you haven't been, you need to start. If you've lost track of that, lost sight of that empty tomb, forgotten about it in the pressing things of day-to-day life, if you need to return to Christ to allow Him to fill your life again, if you never have turned to Him in the first place, whatever your need may be, if you have a need to respond to Christ's invitation, please do so as we stand and as we sing.